We're live from the Law Library at the State Capitol Building. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Midway through the legislative session, the director of the Iowa Department of Human Services urged his staff to brace for big budget cuts, worried about the budget that was moving through the House and Senate. Charlie Krogmeier warned the agency may have to cut 500 jobs, close wards at some institutions, and handle fewer adoptions. He said there would be delays in child abuse investigations, food stamp applications, and placement for delinquent teens. Krogmeier described it as the worst-case scenario, but warned that even if money was approved at a higher rate, significant changes would be necessary. And we're now in the final days of the session, and Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeier is our guest today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Your budget has been approved. It could be tweaked in these final days, but that was the worst-case scenario. Has it improved since then?
Yeah, it's improved quite a bit. The legislature has worked hard, and the governor's office has worked hard to try to move some things around to adjust. So we're looking better. We're not looking, it's not great. It's not like we've got a lot of new money or anything, but we are closer to a status quo or current year level of funding, certainly than we were at the beginning of the year.
And what does that mean in terms of services? What should Iowans expect? And will there be staff layoffs because of, the lack of resources available?
I think where we're at right now, and assuming the budget as it was approved at the end of the week is the final budget that goes through, we're probably looking at somewhere around 100, 125 layoffs, maybe less than that. We'll have another 350 to 400 retirements due to the early retirement program. So in a way, it kind of works ironically. The more retirements we have, probably the less layoffs we have. So those two kind of are going to happen together over the next 3 or 4 months as we play this out. So we'll probably be down somewhere between 250 to 400 employees net. Because some of the vacancies we will fill as we go forward. Part of that depends on whether we have the money to fill them and then whether they're essential positions.
You know, I was going to ask you about that because the early retirement is a double-edged sword. In one sense, it lessens the need to lay people off as people retire. On the other hand, you lose people in key positions. How is that going to play out for you?
Well, we don't know yet for sure. Now, we do know that as of last week, we had 360 people that had signed up. And we've got till April 15th for people to decide what they're going to do. So that's where I think we'll have 400, maybe 500 people that'll opt to take the early out program. And as they do that, we know what positions they're in, whether they're in a local office somewhere or at one of our institutions. We know what their job is. And we will work through the process of, is that a position we need to fill? For example, at our mental health institutions at Woodward and Glenwood at the resource centers, the frontline staff that work with patients there, we have to have them there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't close for the weekend. You don't do anything like that. So most of those positions we're going to need to fill. Some other positions we may not need to fill. So as we work through this process, we'll go through that with the Department of Management, with Department of Administrative Services, and determine whether, one, we have the money to fill them. Secondly, if we need to fill it, and do we need to fill it with a full-time person or a part-time person, or can we do it at a lower pay grade and then save a little money? So that's part of the whole process we're going through, which we're starting on now, but it's going to be pretty intensive over the next 3 months.
You know, yours is an agency. Many people don't see the face of state government in the sense that they know they're hearing about budget cuts, they hear about reductions, but they don't feel it daily. But yours is an agency that some people do, whether they're, serviced at one of the mental health institutions, whether right. It's one of the homes for the disabled, whether it's somebody on food stamps, whether somebody in a, child care situation getting a subsidy for child care because they're low income. So what will we see? What happens now?
I think the biggest impacts are we won't be closing institutions, and it doesn't look like at this point that we'll be reducing the number of beds in some of the institutions. What we will do at some institutions is probably reduce some program areas, some recreational programs and some of those things, which are not core or essential, so there'll be a little bit of reduction there. In our field offices, we have offices now in all 99 counties. About 34 counties have part-time offices. We'll probably have more part-time offices. And we've talked about that for months. We talked about that last fall when we were working on the budget. And we're still working through what that means. But as we get to the final budget numbers, because it's really a staffing issue, do you have staff to put in those offices or don't you? And if you don't, then you need to go to a part-time status. So the 34 part-time offices now will probably be 50 or 60 part-time offices by the time we're done with this process. So that'll be an impact. Now, what that means for the client or Iowans is that instead of having a full-time office in their county to go into to apply for food stamps or Medicaid or other programs, that office may only be open one day a week. And there'll be an office in a neighboring county that'll be full-time. That can work. It's not as convenient, but it can work. More and more of that activity is being done over the internet. More and more of those kinds of contacts are over the telephone or in other ways. So that can be managed, and we can gain some efficiencies there in terms of staff time. We will probably move more of the income maintenance kinds of functions to our call center. We have a call center right now in Council Bluffs that does a lot of that over the phone. We'll probably be doing more of those kinds of centralized call center activities for certain things that you can do that way, either over the internet or through the telephone. We won't be cutting back. We'll try to maintain resources for child protection activities. And those child protection workers that investigate child abuse cases and work with families that are having difficulties, they may not be based in the same county. They may be based in a county that has several counties that they're working out of, but they'll still be covering the same area. So there'll be some change there, but not as much impact.
All right. You're listening to Charlie Krogmeier. He's the director of the Iowa Department of Human Services. If you'd like to join our discussion on the exchange, you can call 1-866-780-9100. Again, the number to ask a question this morning is 1-866-780-9100. Well, after a two-year decline, the Iowa Department of Human Services did record an 11% increase in both reports or investigations of child abuse and findings of abuse or neglect. This is, I know for past directors have told me, this is the one part of what they do that gives them the most heartburn and causes the most worry or sleepless nights. And when you face reductions like this and you see an uptick in investigations and largely, I know you've said possibly linked to the economy, when people are stressed and, and financially in trouble, there's anger in the household. So the need is greater, the resources are fewer. What do you do?
Well, I think what you do in the child protection area is you make sure that you're keeping the resources at the level at which people are investigating and responding right away. So when that call comes in from a hospital or a school, we've got a caseworker in close proximity who can get there and start the investigation, usually with the law enforcement authorities. So that I don't think will change much. The intake process may change so that we don't have, right now we have 8 call centers that those calls come into. By July or sometime this summer, we won't have 8 anymore. We'll be down to probably 1 call center where all of those calls will come in, and we'll manage that process on the intake side a little differently. But the frontline investigators and the staff that respond and provide services to help that child, we hope will stay about the same.
Mm-hmm. What happens when an agency like yours loses funding during a tight economy? I know that there are some who have been advocating that this is not the time to reduce funding to low-income families because it puts them in a cycle that just makes it harder to get out of when the economy recovers, that we're doing these families a disservice and in our state then a disservice. I mean, should they have looked at other options as opposed to budget cuts or?
Well, the legislature had a difficult job this year. They had a difficult job last year, and I don't know that it's going to be a whole lot easier next year.
Yeah.
They have to look at priorities. What they did that we agree with was they did not reduce benefits. So they didn't cut the amount of food assistance benefit. They didn't cut the amount of Medicaid benefit or remove certain services that were there. They maintained those. They pushed us and the people we work with, the private providers that we contract with to provide services. There's more pressure there to think about how you provide those services and can you do them differently and more efficiently. And there's probably a limit to what you can do with that. But that's good to be doing that. And so I think they're going in the right direction in that way.
If you have a question for the Iowa Department of Human Services Director, Charlie Krogmeier, give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Have you come in contact ever with this agency? Are you worried about what reductions in state resources mean for the people of Iowa? Again, 1-866-780-9100. You know, you mentioned moving from 8 call centers or intake centers when you take in child abuse questions or complaints to a single office. That's actually been something that's been bandied about for years, right? I remember after the death of Shelby Dewis, the Spirit Lake toddler, many people were up in arms. There were a couple of different investigations, one being from a national organization. And wasn't there a recommendation to sort of look at a single intake center that had single set of rules and, you know?
Well, yes, I think so. And there are side benefits to doing that. We will probably, instead of having, right now there are about 33 or 35 people in the state, in our staff that do those, that are in those intake centers. We will probably end up with about 25 when we're done, 23 to 25, something like that. So we will gain some efficiency. But the other thing you gain is, while we do have the same rules, the same law, the same training that everybody goes through, you can get some inconsistencies. And so we would hope that you're going to have the same set of supervisors managing that group of people, same individuals all the time. You're going to get some better consistency.
Mm-hmm. There's also been a lot of discussion this legislative session about whether to close one of the state's four mental health institutes. Whether that would be a cost savings, whether in this day and age, those are not the most efficient way to serve patients with mental illness. But in the end, that is not happening. Is that good or bad?
I don't know that it's good or bad. I think the way, if the legislature wants to close an MHI, what we talk to them consistently about is you need to do it in the context of what are the overall services that we offer in the mental health field. And there's no question from just about everybody you talk to, the professionals in the field and the caregivers in the field, that we need to move to less institutionalization. We need to move to more community-type services. And we have been for a long time. It's not that we haven't been, but we need to continue to do that. And I don't think that issue is going to go away. I think that's going to continue to come up as to what is the role of the MHIs in that whole service delivery system. The MHIs were created and located where they're at 150 years ago. Services are different today. Mm-hmm. Now, they are different today. They are much smaller in terms of the inpatient beds. They have, in almost every case, they have leased space out to a lot of other entities. So buildings are being used. Mount Pleasant and Clarinda also have prisons on the campus. So they are multi-service kinds of facilities now rather than just the MHI. But there's no question that the budget will drive us to continue to look at how you can do that differently. Do we continue to have children at two facilities or just one? Do we continue to provide certain kinds of services in as many places as we do? And that's something we need to look at. And we need to look at how all of that fits together in a service delivery system that best serves Iowans.
Are you concerned that there will be any unintended consequences with this budget? It's hard when it's on paper and it's numbers to look at and say, okay, if we squeeze the belt here, something pops out over here. I mean, do you worry about that?
Yeah, I worry about that. But I think that's a normal part of our process, frankly. I mean, I think the way our budget and legislative process works, we almost always discover, not just in the human service area, but in almost every area, almost always discover 6 months from now that something has a consequence that nobody kind of caught at the time. That's one reason why the legislature comes back next year to try to address some of those things and see if that's what they really intended to happen or is it working out slightly differently. So I think that's a normal part of the process. Hopefully it's not something that's terribly serious that we can't figure out a way to manage until they come back.
One of the things the legislature has made a pattern of in the last couple of years is, and not always intentionally, but there's sometimes an underfunding of Medicaid, hoping that either the economy approves or that that the federal government will step in with some extra stimulus dollars. What are we at in terms of the health care program for the low income in Iowa? Is it going to be properly funded by the end of the session, or do you expect lawmakers to have to come in and put more money in that? Are more people signing up for it right now because of the economy?
I just heard the new numbers this morning this month, and the numbers are back up. They've been kind of leveling off in January and February. We haven't been seeing big increases. For some reason, March and April every year, we see spikes, we see increases, and then it kind of tapers off again in May. I'm not sure why that is, but the numbers are up. I think based on Medicaid is a huge program. Mm-hmm. It's billions of dollars, and it's about 30% state money and 70% federal money. So every month, we, along with the fiscal staff at the legislature, do an estimate of what we think it's going to be, but we're projecting out 18 months as to rates. So those estimates change every month, and we're trying to guess what we think the economy is going to do, what we think other factors are going to do. So on a number as big as several billion, you could be 20, 30, 50 million off with the best estimates. I think right now the legislature is underfunding it based on those estimates by something like 30 or 40 million. We would prefer that they fully fund it. But again, by the time we get around to next fall and next winter, those estimates will change again. There probably will be some additional federal funding that may make up some of that. I don't think they're too far off where they need to be.
All right. Director Charlie Krogmeyer, thank you so much for being with us today. Sure. You've been listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. That was Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer. When we come back from the break, we're going to discuss politics with two State House reporters. Stay tuned on Iowa Public Radio. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Joining me this half hour to discuss the legislative session, the Des Moines Bureau Chief of iowapolitics.com, an online nonpartisan news service, Lynn Campbell, thank you for being here, and the Des Moines Bureau Chief for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, Rob Beauchart. So the wheels kind of came off this weekend. There was a hope that the legislature would adjourn, but they're back today, and it seemed that a lot of the hang-up over the weekend was the iJobs program, the big stimulus program from last year. The governor wants lawmakers to add an additional $150 million in borrowing or bonding. Lynn, let me start with you. That has caused some concern, even among majority Democrats who voted for this bonding last year.
Definitely. There are some conservative Democrats, some of the same people who voted against prevailing wage last year, who do plan to vote against this bill. They do not support bonding or an increase in bonding. $105 million of this bonding was already authorized last year. So this is an increase of $45 million that would come from the RIF fund. Republicans don't like it, and some Democrats don't like it, so there is some concern there. There was a rumor out there Saturday that the votes weren't there for infrastructure, but I asked Representative Doris Kelly about that. She's one of the no votes.
She's a Democrat.
She says they hadn't even caucused on it yet at that time. They had spent most of the day caucusing on the standings bill. So they're more
Another
than one
budget
holdup.
Bill. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And Rod, let me ask you, because the governor, I've seen him behind the chambers late at night. I've seen, you know, that he was here over the weekend some meeting with lawmakers. I mean, he's pressing very hard on this legislation and in person, and, you know, not just calling them into his office, but actually doing the legwork himself and coming up to them. And I saw him approach a Representative Renee Schulte, a freshman lawmaker from Cedar Rapids who happens to be a Republican, and say, you know, we could really use your support on this, Renee. Can I count you in on the iJobs bill? And to my surprise, she actually said, I'll see what I can do, Governor. We're working on it. And here, Republicans have locked up on this previously, said no to bonding, but you've got someone from Cedar Rapids who's probably feeling some pressure back home.
It's a tough spot for all the Linn County Republicans in that this money, at least half of it, or around a half, would go towards disaster recovery projects, a lot of them in Linn County and Cedar Rapids, that where they need the money. Ron Corbett, the mayor, was here, and he made the point he doesn't care where the money comes from. They just need state help to continue the recovery process. Some of this is sort of interesting in that people voted for iJobs last year and now I was talking with one lawmaker who said it's like being a little pregnant. If you voted for iJobs last year, politically, you're going to take the heat for that vote. So to turn around this year and say, well, it's more bonding, when in reality, it probably isn't, because the treasurer, when he went out, was able to get such a favorable interest rate that there's more room. They actually can get more proceeds from this second go around for less money. And so it's an interesting political dynamic there.
So they're crying foul over something, one, they already supported in the past, and two, is unlikely to cost them much more money.
Correct.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please call us at 1-866-780-9100. What will you remember out of this legislative session? What do you want to ask our intrepid reporters here? 1-866-780-9100. I noticed that they've already come out with their what we did well sheet, their email they sent to us reporters saying, yeah, you know what, look what we accomplished. And one of them was saying that essentially they had balanced the budget without raising taxes. However, while that's true when it comes to income taxes or the sales tax, Iowans are likely to see higher property taxes. Is that correct, Lynn?
Yes, Chris Rance outlined that on the House floor. I think it was on Friday. These are starting to blend together these days. But definitely, he called Representative Alicia Gaiman, a Davenport, a Democrat, up on the House floor, and she agreed with him lawmakers are shortchanging many areas of property tax credits, as well as shortchanging schools by nearly $170 million. And although lawmakers did pass a bill earlier this session saying that school districts should first tap into their reserves before increasing property taxes, I think everyone would agree that property taxes will indeed increase.
And Rod, Republicans are making a lot of hay out of this. If you remember in 2006 when the governor ran for election, he campaigned on lower property taxes. His first year in office in 2007, he convened a committee, a task force to study this issue, to lower property tax rates for commercial businesses. And now the extent of this session is going to be that commercial property taxes are going to go up locally, the very thing that most, you know, taxpayers complain about. But does that play back in home districts during the election? Is that lost on voters, or is this something that could really hurt him?
I think it will be a situation where it'll play out district by district. It'll have different dynamics in different areas. Property-rich areas of the state may not see the same kind of impact that places where schools really rely on property tax to fill in whatever gap the state doesn't provide. If history says anything, when Republicans were in control and Governor Vilsack offered a cost-cutting measure that included reducing money for property tax reimbursements to local government, and I think that the Democrats were able to capitalize on that issue and send a lot of people to Des Moines in areas where that was a hot topic, so it may come back to bite them the other way this time. That all sort of, it's a long time until the election, so there's a lot of dynamics yet to play out.
You know, one of the things they protected was teacher pay. You know, they had been putting some extra money into teacher salaries and professional development. And while most of state government took a 10% budget reduction, they protected the money they had set aside for teacher pay. Lynn, is that going to pay off for them in support from the teachers union, do you think? I mean, was that the goal as the Democratic caucus did this?
Perhaps. I mean, certainly working towards at least the median, national median on teacher pay was a goal for Democrats. They want to continue that goal. They also, you know, on a different topic, they had also continued the goal of making sure that all children have health insurance. So these are things that they certainly couldn't back down from politically. But, you know, when I spoke with Brad Hudson with the Iowa State Education Association, they're actually pretty satisfied with the level of funding that the legislature is providing for them for state aid for K-12 schools this year. They said in the current year they're being shortchanged about $270 million, and this upcoming year will just be $170 million. So that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and that $100 million extra, that came out of the cash reserves, right, Rod?
No,
they didn't. Oh, that's right. That's where the governor wanted it to come from, but they were able to find other money in the budget. But let's talk about the cash reserves then. They are spending about $200 million, is it, from the state's savings account, piggy bank? Yeah. But that does leave money in the piggy bank, and Democrats are saying, well, look, we're better off than most states who have completely wiped it out. Is that smart, considering that next year could be a tough budget as well, Rod?
Yeah, it's a good idea to keep money in there, both for cash flow purposes, and that's how Iowa got its AAA bond rating. Whether or not that's important or not, it depends who you talk to.
That's
the
like
governor
your credit
likes
score
to tout
for a person, right? The AAA bond rating. That's sort of like if I got a good credit score, I'd get a lower interest rate for my house. Okay.
Mm-hmm. As far as how it and teacher pay and all these things play out, it's a different scenario for senators. House members run on a two-year basis, and it's for them, it's sort of what have you done for me lately, and they have to go before the voters dealing with the worst disaster, both weather-wise and economically, that the state's faced in a long time, whereas senators come with a four-year record, and this is the first time they go before voters to say, we raised the minimum wage, we raised teacher pay, and so It's going to play differently depending on if you're running for the House or if you're running for the Senate this time.
Mm-hmm. And the Senate, Democrats hold a much stronger majority and have fielded, it appears, more candidates for each seat. Lynn, do Republicans have any shot at taking back the Senate? I know it's so early and so hard to say, but I mean, it does look tougher for them there.
I don't have a good feel on that. Do you, Red?
Things would really have to go anti-incumbent. And again, all politics are local in that regard. I haven't really had a chance to size up who recruited what candidates. But that will, it's funny, right now, if the election were now, it would probably be a bad outcome for Democrats. As the summer and fall go, if the economy starts going better, if these eye jobs, I mean, the focus is there's hardly been any job activity associated with eye jobs. It seems like beginning this spring through the summer and fall is when all that money was passed late enough last year that it really didn't generate much construction activity. If things go gangbusters, like Democrats hope happens through the construction season this year, and has a churning effect economically, and people come to the polls saying things aren't so bad anymore, mm-hmm. who knows how that's going to play.
All right. One of the issues that one of the scandals as we came into the session was the film office and the possible misspending and misuse of that tax credit system. So there was some tax credit reform. Is that something that people care about, Lynn? I mean, Republicans are saying, well, somebody now has to pay higher taxes when you cut tax credits to businesses or you suspend the film tax credit. On the other hand, that's our tax dollars, so some people have to be happy that's happening.
Well, businesses sure care about it. I mean, they certainly say that cutting back on tax credits sent a bad message to Iowa businesses. On the other hand, people who advocated for an elimination of tax credits this year aren't happy with the package either this year. They say it only eliminates three tax credit programs. It suspends the film tax credit until 2013. So really, it doesn't do as much. It doesn't go quite as far as the governor's tax credit review panel had called for. So as far as whether it's on people's radar, you know, certainly there are more human interest issues that will touch almost every Iowan, shall you say, the legislation that would require all children under 18 to buckle up, the legislation that would require us to not text or send text messages while we're driving. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of issues that are closer to home for people.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at that, you mentioned one, concerns from businesses about the tax credit reductions, and two, you mentioned some concerns about whether the economy is going to improve in time. There's some last minute legislation on small business assistance. Is there not, Rod?
There's it's a little over $5 million that the Senate put into the infrastructure bill, I believe it was, and it offers some low interest loan and a number of things that I don't know, when you talk $5 million, it has to feel like we've got to get something in there for job creation.
Otherwise, we're going to take some huge heat from Republicans who've been hitting that all session long.
And they still will take that heat.
I think so, too. Let me ask you, another scandal that has erupted since the legislative session began is the Iowa Association of School Boards and some possible misspending by the executive director, also the CFO, the chief financial officer. The Government Oversight Committee will continue to meet once the session ends. But, Lynn, you've sat through a couple of those meetings. Can they do much to change the outcome or make sure that this tax money that is funneled through schools to the Iowa Association of School Board for, you know, policy help from the board, can they do much to impact that situation?
I think their real power is in generating public pressure on the group and on nonprofits in general. You know, the IASB, unfortunately, has really been the new poster child for government corruption, which used to be CTEC. And we saw a lot of lawmakers compare the IASB with CTEC in the four public hearings that we've had so far. The public hearings we've had so far have been an hour and a half, and they're going to be going into eight-hour hearings during the interim. So we'll see a lot more of this. And I think I would imagine the School Board Association would have still chosen to fire Maxine Kilcrease, the executive director, on Thursday, even without the public pressure. But the public pressure sure pushes it along, I think.
Yeah, sure. When you have lawmakers every day asking why is she still, you know, taking a salary, even though she was on leave, but she was on paid leave. Yeah,
exactly. And they tried to explain that they would have had to pay her out for her entire three-year contract if they didn't do it the right way.
Yeah. We've got an email from Jack in Ottumwa. He says, Republicans say that little has been done to help private businesses create permanent long-term jobs at a time of widespread unemployment. They also say Democrats have shifted up millions of dollars in education costs onto property taxpayers, creating long-range indebtedness to fund temporary projects that this is not going to help, and it's going to cause problems with the cash reserves. I think he's saying that this is really going to play well for Republicans. What do you think, Rod? I mean, I know it's too early. I know you mentioned that the economy could have a change in spirit among Iowans.
It will, in the sense that these won't be long-term jobs, that the iJobs program is responsible for. It will be some tangible evidence in especially the flood-ravaged communities that something positive is happening, and I'm sure the state people responsible for it will show up and explain that they're the reason that for whatever positive is coming out of it. But he's right as far as economic changes that have a long-lasting effect. It doesn't seem like this session they were so focused on trying to deal with budget issues. I think that the business package that they included in that RIF has a study of the regulatory climate, which to a certain degree is a recognition that maybe something needs to be looked at and changed, or you wouldn't call for a study.
On the other hand, we've seen what happens to most studies when they then return to the legislature a year later with the study in hand. Not much, often.
Depends who's in control this time.
That's true. We'll see. Well, yeah, if it's regulatory climate and Republicans have gained control, there might be some movement. Let me ask you, Lynn, you were just this morning at a rally of One Iowa, a group that supports the Supreme Court ruling that allows for same-sex marriage in Iowa. They had been successful throughout the session, holding lawmakers or legislative leaders to their word that they would not bring this up for a vote. Republicans, you know, disappointed about that. We're now going to be more than a year out by the time the election hits of that ruling. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact are you seeing, if any, on these races?
You know, gosh, it really depends on who you talk to. I mean, the One Iowa folks, the folks who are in support of same-sex marriage, will tell you that there are other issues on people's plate, mm-hmm. that people are care more about the economy and their jobs and how to make it day-to-day than to worry about who else is getting married. So they'll say that that's not a major issue. But, of course, the folks from the Iowa Family Policy Center and folks who are really pushing for this constitutional amendment banning gay marriage would disagree. One option for voters, you know, come November, of course, is to approve a constitutional convention, which surprisingly neither supporters or opponents of same-sex marriage are pushing for a convention, because they say that'll open up a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
But that is certainly another option for voters.
I've actually been surprised a little bit that there hasn't been more focus on that, but just because there's been so much talk from those who do support a constitutional amendment, I was surprised that wasn't an avenue that they were looking at. But is it just that they don't want to turn into California and have, you know, a vote on sort of everything possible? I mean, you know, California is kind of this referendum state now. And
right. It's sort of a be careful what you wish for situation when you open up a constitutional convention. The candidates running for governor aren't pushing that idea either.
All right. You've been listening to the Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, Rod Beauchart, and Des Moines Bureau Chief of iowapolitics.com, Lynn Campbell. Thank you both for being here. I greatly appreciate this discussion today. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. We've had production assistance today from Ben Kiefer and Rosalind Sixby. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt, and technical support comes from Dennis Reese and John Pemble.